Welcome to another episode of the Gay Barchive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and our guest today is Roger Dennehy, who's going to be telling us about Cuffs LA and a few other bars in Southern California. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. It's always interesting to hear people's perspectives of gay bars from the past. And I know your kind of adult life started in performing as a dancer in Las Vegas. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was in back east, worked with a modern dance company, and then I moved out here to California and stayed with my mom and dad, and finally got an apartment and worked at a bar called the Ball Express, which was a big disco. And I heard that they were having auditions for the Stardust, and so a couple of my friends and I went to audition. There were a huge number of people there, and they picked eight of us to be on the show. And I had a mustache then, and Don Arden, who was the head of it, said, "You'll have to shave that mustache, Mr. Dennehy." And I mumbled to myself, "I'll shave this mustache for anything." And he said, "It's not necessary." I worked there for 5 years. Then I moved back to LA. I couldn't stand the heat in Vegas, and so I resigned, which was horrible because I love dancing and being in the show. But I moved back to LA, and I went to work at the Coca-Cola, where I was in charge of a R2-D2 like Coke can. Had a remote control and a microphone, and I used to take them all over LA, Palm Springs, El Centro, San Diego, and do shows where I'd talk like a robot to people, and had a little 8-track tape deck in it that played the Coke song, and I used to make them dance and entertain kids, and it was amazing. And I did that for 5 years. It was so much fun. And I don't know what happened, but I ended up leaving there, and I went to work at the Dylan's, a disco. And I worked there for a couple of years. Then I went to another bar in San Diego. Finally, I moved to LA, and I got a job as a cosmetic group production manager for makeup. And I did that for a few years, and the owner decided he wanted his son to take my place. So he retired me. And that's when I went to work at Jock's, which was a small bar. It was fun. I was there for a while. And then I left there and went to the Bullet, which is kind of a leather bar, known as a leather bar, but it was general. Everybody went there. And it was a lot of fun. And I played softball for a couple of bars, and I tore the ligaments in my knee. And I was playing, I can't remember the name of the bar, damn it, in West Hollywood. It was a real sleazy bar. It had lights on, and it was okay, but we'd find syringes in the bathroom behind beer cases. one time I was playing pool with a couple of guys and somebody came up to the bar to order. I went behind the bar, looked down, and he had a syringe falling out of his pants leg. And I just said, you need to take that and get out of here. And so I didn't last there long. I couldn't stand it. And that's when the manager of Cuffs needed a door guard and asked me if I would do it. I had a big brace on my leg, so I couldn't move around much, but I worked at the door for about a year. And then I went on the floor. I was a floor guard, and I was instructed by the owner to stop people from messing around with each other. It was dark. We had 15-watt red bulbs. We had a DJ. Our music was known throughout the world, industrial, tribal, rock and roll. It was amazing, very loud, and neighbors were constantly calling saying, can you turn the bass down? And we went through a lot of hassles with the police department. There was a sergeant at Northeast Police Department that was very homophobic, and he was had it out for Cuffs. So we got raided a number of times. Even one time with 20 people in the bar, they had two police officers sitting on the beer cases, drinking beer, waiting for somebody to touch somebody. The health department, the fire department, the police department, the ABC all show up each time with like 15, 20 cars out front. We had a capacity, legal capacity of 70. We put a lot more people in there than that on the weekends. We had a line at the door. Before I came to work there, it was packed every day of the week, just packed. It was very popular, sleazy, you know, with the lights low and all that. So when I took over, I had to clean up everything. All the activity and all that. And it was such a hassle trying to control people and bartend at the same time. And so I came up with the idea of having a squirt gun, one of those big ones. And every time I saw somebody messing around, I would squirt them with the squirt gun. And they would jump. And I'd go, no, no, no. And they'd stop. And that was fun.
Was all at Cuffs, right? This is... Yeah. What you're talking about is Cuffs. And you were there for about 10 or 12 years, starting in the early 90s, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Now, Cuffs, from what I've read about it, it was a very kind of dark, dingy bar that was almost seemed like it was designed for people to become intimate with other customers. And I've heard people say that before. Is that the case? Was it really kind of almost on the edge of a sex club look?
Yeah, it was. When I came in, it was really bad. And when I went on the floor, the owner asked me to control stuff. And so I was known as the Peter guard. And not very popular, but we had to control it. And finally, one of the court cases we had, they made us put more lights up. So we put lights along the edge of the bar, white lights, and increased the red bulbs to 25 watt. And that helped. It cut down on our business a lot. We still were packed on the weekends, and it was, you know, it was hard controlling stuff. When I took over managing, we were in court a number of times. My boss spent a lot of money on attorneys, constantly fighting the police department, and ABC,
And he was just a small businessman, right? He He owned just owned Cuffs. He didn't have like 20 gay bars all over the place.
Nope, just Cuffs, and he made a fortune. Yeah.
Which is hard to believe on a bar that only holds 70 people.
Yeah. I mean, I made a lot of money bartending there and managing. I only claimed so much on my taxes, so I had to put money in a safe deposit box. And when I met Anthony, my husband, I had a place in Toluca Lake. He had a place in West Hollywood, and I spent a lot of time at his place. And he finally said, if you want to move in together, you have to buy me a house. So I went to my safe deposit box, and I had like $25,000 in it. That I had just been sticking money in it, not paying attention to it. We had charged people at the door, and the bartender got a percentage of that because they got a drink ticket. And they didn't, you know, usually tip with the drink ticket. So we gave the bartender a percentage of the door. Plus, people tipped a lot too. So we made the bartenders were, you know, very well supplied with money.
Yeah, that was about the end of the good days in the gay bar business. After the early 2000s, things kind of changed and the bar scene hasn't been the same. But you mentioned Cuffs had a capacity legally of 70 people. How did that compare to Bullet and Jocks? Were they also small bars or?
No, Jocks was a little bit bigger than Cuffs, but not much. They had a capacity of like 100. The Bullet was the same, but they had a big patio, and the main part of the bar wasn't any bigger than Cuffs. But they weren't harassed like we were. They were in North Hollywood, and the police department didn't pester them much. But they didn't have the promiscuous activity in their bars that Cuffs had and the Fault Line had. So they weren't harassed. Yeah.
So partially the reason for the harassment was because of the jurisdiction that Cuffs was in. The people, the police in that area were more interested in pursuing any kind of harassment of a gay bar in that area than they were in North Hollywood at the time. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Even the Fault Line was in a different police district than Cuffs was. And although they, you know, had some issues with the police department, it was very rare. And they had the main part of the bar was pretty dark. They had a huge patio. People got carried away a lot in the bar, and they weren't harassed for it like we were because they were in a different police district.
Now, I spoke with one member of my Gay Bar Archives group on Facebook who was reminiscing about Cuffs a little bit, and he said that in his day, when he used to go to Cuffs, it was common to go there and have a couple of drinks and then walk across the street to Basic Plumbing,
right?
And get a little action and then maybe come back to the bar. Was that pretty normal?
Yep. Yeah. There was two sex clubs, stand-up sex clubs. They weren't bathhouses. They were stand-up sex clubs. One of them was right across the street from Cuffs, and the other one was a block down the street from Cuffs. And I actually was part owner of the Exile, which was the one down the street when I was managing Cuffs.
And what was Exile like? Was it a small place also? And
it was pretty big. It was a stand-up sex place. It had a lot of rooms and slings and outside patio, a video room. It was pretty sizable. It was originally the Queen of Hearts, which was there for many, many years, way before I moved to LA. And then it closed, and the guys that I worked with got together with me and bought it and changed it to the Exile.
So all of these places that you've mentioned so far, Jocks, Bullet, Cuffs, Fault Line, Exile, Basic Plumbing, all of these places were kind of a little rough and tumble men's bars, right? This is not a place where you'd find, you know, pretty college boys going in preppy clothes or drag queens, you know, going in there cruising or anything. These were all men's bars, correct?
Yeah, at Cuffs, I had outside the bar, there was a display box, and I had a sign in it with a bottle of cologne and a line through it. No excessive colognes allowed. No open-toed shoes allowed. No high heels allowed. And we stuck to that. I mean, I had a guy come in, very handsome, but he was wearing a lot of cologne, and I just told him, I'm sorry, I can't serve you with all that cologne. You need to leave. And that's the way we worked. We had women come in periodically, but not very often.
Yeah, and that was something that's changed a lot in the business, too. You know, back then, there were, going all the way back into the 40s and 50s, there were a lot of gay bars that were, you know, manly men's bars that had dress codes that required, you know, leather or denim or flannel or something, you know, that was considered masculine. And they did not, a number of clubs. I think one of the first ones I stumbled across in Philadelphia was the Bike Stop, which did not allow, it had the same kind of door policy. If you had cologne on or if you were wearing, you know, a suit and tie, you didn't get in the bar.
Yeah. Right. We had the Gauntlet down the street, a little ways from Cuffs, that I used to go to a lot. That was a leather bar. And on weekends, they had shows and they required leather. You couldn't get in unless you were wearing some kind of leather. And the Fault Line was a leather bar. And Cuffs was known as, it was known as a leather bar, but a kind of, you know, a men's bar.
Kind of on the Levi leather edge, not so much the leather.
Yeah, yeah. We had a lot of people in leather, but we had a lot of people in Levi's and denim jackets and tank tops and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And how long did Cuffs last? How long were they in business there?
I'm not sure when it opened. I know that somebody said it opened in the early 80s, but I believe it opened before that. When I was there, there was a lot of going back and forth as to which was the oldest bar in L.A., Cuffs or Larry's. I never went to Larry's. It closed before I moved to L.A., but it was open sometime around the time Cuffs was. So I'm not really sure exactly when it opened, but I'm sure it was before the 80s.
And when did it close?
About a year after I left.
So like 2004-ish?
Yeah, might be later than that. I think maybe around 2008. I left in April and it closed in January. The guy that took over my place was, an idiot. You know, Mike was bartending and there weren't that many people in the bar, but there were like three or four people in the bathroom. And Mike said, "Can you go clean out the bathroom?" And Bob said, "Oh, don't worry about it." And Mike said, "Fine, I quit," walked out. The DJ quit. The guy was a putz. So he brought the bar down.
Now you mentioned to me that the first bar that you went into was the Fault Line.
Right. I came from Vegas. It was Gay Day at Disneyland. And I came from Las Vegas and went to the Fault Line, the only bar I knew of, and got a ticket and got on the bus for the gay day at Disney. And that was my first visit to gay bars in LA.
What did you think of that when you first walked in the door?
I was kind of shocked because, you know, there were a lot of people in leather, and I was from Vegas, which was, you know, I wore construction boots and Levi's and tank tops. And I was like, what, why do you dress like that when you're captain the Lido? You know, it was, you know, I had a lot of friends, but I didn't really fit in with all the show kids that had to fix their makeup before they went out after the show.
Right. It's a different scene. It's totally. There are several cities, you know, as you look across the country that have a reputation for that. Back in the day, Atlanta had an image of, you know, being required to have your shirt starched and your hair done when you went out to the club. Dallas was the same way. You know, certain bars in West Hollywood were that way. There were pockets around the country that were like that. And Vegas certainly would fit that mold because all these people spend their entire lives, you know, dressing up and putting on extra glitter and, you know, trying to be fabulous and outdo each other. And your bar scene, obviously, is the more, you know, laid back, manly man's bar. That's a total, you know, totally different from that scene. So I can understand how that would be very appealing to you.
Yeah. I used to, Village People came and did a show for the show kids, and I used to hang out with them at the disco, and they weren't pretty dress up boys. They, you know, were like me, and we had a great time. I loved them. When I went out with Vince Carde, he would always dress up and I wouldn't. So we just didn't look the same.
You got to express your own personality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So over the years that you lived in LA and, you know, were exposed to the bar scene and worked in the bar scene, how did you see the scene changing over those decades?
It was very loose and free in the 80s. And when I went there, it was like that. It wasn't until the police started beating up on the bars. Some of the bars in West Hollywood, the discos, were harassed for AIDS and stuff like that. And that's when a couple of us got together and formed the Tavern Guild, which was for bar harassment. We had an attorney and used to go to court with each other to support each other. And it was really cool. We had a lot of bars involved in it. Mickey's in West Hollywood was involved. And it was very successful. It helped a lot, the Tavern Guild, but it couldn't protect cuffs. It was out of control on cuffs for many years. I mean, on the weekends when I worked there, we would put probably 120 people in the bar, stop letting people in when there was no more room, and start a line at the door, which ran the whole length of the bar. That happened Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. After hours, we had a line at the door. It was, you know, very, very popular after hours bar. One of the only after hours bar in LA. Everybody came there. Everybody. And then, you know, the police started harassing everybody and things changed. Everybody was on guard all the time. I would had a pager because we didn't have cell phones at that time. And, you know, like 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd get a page and it would be, the police are here, you need to come in. And I would have to get up and drive to the bar, and, you know, it was crazy. It changed the bar scene so much. And Silver Lake mostly, because Silver Lake was known as the leather bars area. The Gauntlet, the Fault Line, Cuffs, were all leather bars. West Hollywood would look down on Silver Lake bars. but they would sneak over for the beer bus.
Right? Isn't that always the way it is? Back in those days, numerous cities that I've lived in and visited, it was amazing how they would have, you know, a $5 all-you-can-drink beer bus or whatever, or 25-cent cocktail night, you know, where every drink was 25 cents. And I'm like, and that's crazy when you think about it, how much people could go out and get totally trashed for less than 10 bucks, and including tips if they bothered to tip, which I know sometimes was a problem. So what stands in the place of Cuffs right now? Do you know?
It's, I don't know anybody that's seen it open, but I understood that the Koreans bought it and had it as some kind of wine bar or something like that, but nobody's ever seen anybody go in there. I've never seen it open, but it's still there. You know, it's still the same. It's, you know, gray with red trim and just the way we painted it.
So you get to drive by and feel like you're going back there. You just can't walk in the door and have a drink.
No.
What about the Fault Line? What's there?
Some woman bought it, and it's kind of a, I guess, a mixed bar, but they still have their beer bus on Sunday. It's not very popular anymore. She really ruined it. And people stopped going there. I'm not sure what it's like now. I haven't been in there in a long, long time, ever since they sold it. I used to play on their softball team. I don't know what it's like now. I know that she pretty much killed the business there for the gay people. So
what's your favorite bar in LA now?
Well, I don't go out anymore. I'm 70 years old this February, and I've been through so many health issues. I've had two liver transplants. I have Meniere's disease, so I'm kind of confined to home because of the vertigo. I'm hoping for a procedure to fix that, fighting for it. My insurance company keeps denying it. So I don't get to go out. But I would say the Eagle, that's where the Gauntlet used to be. That would be my favorite place. They have dancers. They have a lot of functions there. And I know the bartenders and the owners there very well. That would be my favorite bar.
So if there was one bar from your past that you could resurrect, which one would it be?
Cuffs, for sure.
So you really liked that place?
I loved it. It was great. I had so many friends there. People were really cool. With the promiscuity issues, a lot of things had to change, but I loved it. And I like my boss. He let me do anything I wanted. I used to do parties there. The most popular was the end of the summer beach party. We had contests and stuff like that. It was great. I really enjoyed being there, and I hated having to leave, but my boss got friendly with this Bob guy, and he decided that he was going to take over the bar and told me that I was going to have to answer to him. And I said, I'll wait till I talk to Cuffs, Wes. He said, no, you have to answer to me. And this is when we were closing. And I just said, fuck you. And I got in my car and drove home. I called my boss, Wes. He lived in Palm Springs. And I said, what the hell's going on? And he said, well, let me talk to Bob and I'll call you back. And he never did. Never got a thank you from him, nothing.
After like 10 or 12 years of working there,
11 years, yeah.
Crazy.
I took care of the place totally. I did all the beer orders. The only thing he did was pay the staff. That's all. And, you know, the attorney when we had to do that. But otherwise, I ran the whole business for him. I was really devastated that he didn't so much as acknowledge me.
Yeah. So what did you do after you left Cubs?
We got a mortgage on our house, and I went back to school and got a degree in nursing and started working as a nurse in convalescent homes. And then I went to the Veterans Hospital and worked at the Veterans Hospital for about 5 years. And then I started getting sick with my liver disease, which was from Hep C. I had Hep C for about 10 years. And when I got it, when I was diagnosed, they said that, you know, you have about 10-year life expectancy. And, you know, for 7 years, I was violently ill. My husband took amazing care of me. And I mean, I can't believe that he stuck with me through all that. And he still takes amazing care of me. I was very lucky to find him. But, you know, I love nursing. You know, I really loved it. And I finally had to retire from it because of the illness.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of gay men, especially gay men who are over like 40 or 50, who have developed a passion for caring for other people. I guess because of the whole AIDS epidemic and how important it became, such a big part of their life, taking care of their friends and, you know, and seeing the need for their services in that field. So, you know, I'm not totally surprised that you went into nursing after leaving the bar business.
Yeah, I had a lover, Danny, who had AIDS, and I used to help his mom take care of him. We stopped dating just because he was so sick, and I would still go over to the house and sit with him and help his mom take care of him, and until the day he died. And I even took care of the memorial services. And then David, my other boyfriend, lived with somebody, and he had hepatitis D, as in David. He started getting sick, and I moved him in with me and took care of him for a couple of years until he passed away. And then when I met Anthony, he was had Hep C, and they were putting him on interferon, which is really hardcore. And he said he didn't want to get involved with anybody because of the treatment. I said, well, you need somebody to take care of you, so I'm going to do that, whether you like it or not. And I took care of him for a year, and now we got together, and we've been together for 18 years now.
Wow.
I've spent my whole life taking care of people. And now I need to be taken care of.
Well, at least you paid it forward, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and kind of share some of your memories of the bars in Los Angeles going back into the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s. It's definitely something in the course of this project that I want to capture as many stories as I can, because there's going to come a time when there's not anybody around to tell the story of Cuffs or to tell the story of Fault Line or any of these other bars, because nobody's done it so far, really. So
yeah,
I appreciate
I'm so appreciative of you doing this. It's amazing. You know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing how many bars there were that played an important role in people's lives. I've talked to a filmmaker whose first major commercial film success was based on his own coming out story in small town Ohio at a gay bar. You know, I've talked to people who have met their spouses, that their partners that they've been with for 30, 40, 50 years because of a gay bar. Yeah. I've met people who run nonprofit organizations and activist groups that never would have existed if they hadn't had a bar community back in the day.
Yeah. APLA, AIDS Project Los Angeles, is an unbelievable organization. To this day, they supply me with a guy that comes in, actually comes in today, does my laundry, cleans my bedroom, the living room, dining room, the bathroom. And it's because of my illnesses that they do that. And they've done that for so many people. And the bar scene is what, you know, helped organize APLA many years ago. And it's an amazing organization now helping people.
Yeah. And one thing people don't necessarily realize is that the men's bars, the leather bars, the Eagles, the Cuffs, the Fault Lines, they were all very supportive in the, as the AIDS crisis came in to our community, in helping fundraise and organize and do that. A lot of people like to look at, the leather bars, like, as you said, with the people from West Hollywood, they like to look down their nose at them. But in reality, they were the backbone of the community. They did a lot of work and raised a lot of money to make these, these organizations possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I always like to mention that, because a lot of people, like you said, they like to look down their nose and say, he's into the leather bar. Screw that.
And yeah.
They don't realize how much that community has done, for the gay scene. Not to mention the fact that even though it's not a chain of bars, the Eagles have had an impact in communities all across the country, more so than almost any other chain, if you want to call it that, of bars. They're all independently owned, but they still have the same kind of brotherhood and camaraderie that that kind of help bring all these communities together across the country.
Yeah, when I was, early days of going to the bars in LA, the Eagles were everywhere. Every major city had an Eagle bar. LA had its too, and it's an icon. Major support to the community, Eagle, and we have an Eagle bar now. So,
absolutely. Well, I definitely appreciate you taking the time, and I look forward to putting this video together so everyone can enjoy it and learn a little bit about, Los Angeles 30, 40 years ago. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
That concludes another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show. For more information about this episode or to find more episodes, visit gaybarchives.com.